What up? It's the Crossover Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. My guest today is the host of the NBA on TNT Tuesdays and a great friend, Adam Lefkoe. You know, the Tuesday show has been such a huge hit. It's still kind of new, but it is already, I think, established as such a vital part of the NBA media landscape. Of course, it's kind of the younger, hipper version of the Thursday show of Inside the NBA. That show, still the standard, but what's been amazing about the Tuesday show, as I'm sure you all as fans have seen, they've got that special something, that chemistry. They're having such a blast on set while informing and entertaining all of us. It just works. Dwayne Wade, Candace Parker, Shaq, and my buddy Lefkoe steering it with, I think, the same skill that Ernie Johnson does. And, you know, Ernie's a legend. Adam, new to that particular venue, but I am not surprised at all at the dexterity he has shown in that environment. Adam and I worked together for 7 years at Bleacher Report, where he still works as well. We met there in 2013. We did like a bazillion videos together, live draft night specials, all kinds of stuff. He's such a pro. He's such a great talent. He's so just sharp and quick on his feet and just a joy to be around. He's the perfect guy for this job. And I'm just so glad. I'm so proud of him. And I'm so glad that all of you as NBA fans are getting to experience the full Adam Lefkoe experience on the NBA on TNT Tuesdays. It's a great interview. We had a phenomenal conversation. We did dueling Shaq impressions. I'm not sure either of them are going to be winning any Emmy Awards, but we had a blast. I think you're really going to enjoy the interview. Before we jump in today, I just want to thank you all for tuning in. And if you enjoy the show, please rate, review, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. If you've got feedback, hit me on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, up next, Adam Lefkoe. So stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to welcome one of my favorite people in NBA media, one of my favorite people, period. Former coworker who is just incredibly talented, passionate, as hardworking as anybody I know, and just a really good dude. And I'm just so glad to have him on the pod and to get a chance to talk to him again, though we also have already done so on his pod. So listen to both of them, people. I'm asking you, if you enjoy this, and you will, hit up both. Hit up both, because Adam Lefkoe is worth your time. He's the host of NBA on TNT Tuesday. Does some great work for a little startup you may have heard of called Bleacher Report. And also host of the Lefkoe Show podcast, where you can hear us yammering some more. My old teammate, Adam Lefkoe, welcome, sir.
Man, we played a good game of trivia. It was a lot of fun. So that
you kicked
was
my ass.
I'm just good at the nonsense. You're good at like real world issues, and I'm good at remembering who tweeted what, you know?
My brain is just toast after this season. And so, your producer, David Ingber, throwing out all of this minutia, it just overloaded my circuits, man. But that was fun. That was great. People, go tee up the Lefkoe Show. It was an excuse for us to get to rap more and for you to show that you are a much better trivia player than I am, if nothing else. So you just wrapped season two of the NBA on TNT Tuesday and had a really nice story written about you and the crew there as well on The Ringer by John Gonzalez. Phenomenal story. People go check that out as well. The show's a hit, man. And you guys have obviously a lot to be proud of. It feels like in a way it's still in its infancy because you had two weird seasons to debut in. After concluding this run for this season, what are you feeling about where it is and given all the context of starting in a pandemic, finishing during a pandemic and a compressed season? Are you just ready to just like exhale and just like pass out?
The coolest moment last night was walking off the set, and it stunk that Candace couldn't be there, but she has a season to play, so we understand. But to kind of look at Wade and to realize – that we're saying goodbye, but we're not worried if we're coming back next year. And that, you know what I mean? Like, that's exciting because now I can look at the producers and go, how do we build? Like, how do we grow? Like, how do we take this ecosystem, this universe, and just keep it going? I think the thing that I was most excited about is that the rest of the basketball world is ready to honor Candace Parker in her rightful spot of someone that deserves our attention and our respect. You know, our first year, Kobe passed away, and it kind of changed the whole mood. That was the week of our first episode. And that episode got delayed, and they had that incredible Inside the NBA episode at Staples with Jerry West and all these characters and just honoring Kobe. And we didn't even get to go. We hadn't been in the same room until 50 seconds before that first episode. And so to build chemistry and to learn who we were, and then to come to this season where like this Candace Shaq feud became a thing, where during the middle of the week, Wade would invite me over and we'd have dinner and we would just talk, and we got to watch the Inside the NBA documentary and look at each other and be like, we're a part of this. You know, I got to hang out one night with Chuck, and I was asking questions about the Thursday show. And he said, man, just never forget, the sun and the moon don't compete with each other. And it was just like that thing where it's like, you don't have to be the Thursday show. Like, I had all these really cool moments, and just for us to kind of find our stride and to realize we're teammates with them. You're always going to be compared to the Thursday show because they're literally going into the Hall of Fame this week. Like, they're going to the Hall of Fame this week, and to not feel like we need to copy, but more like we'll be the young guys, you know, we'll be the rookies to the vets. And it's been cool to find our stride, but it's just cool. Cause like, I love NBA media, and to be seen as like a piece of it now, like we can add to the conversation. We can be that NBA show of record for that night. I just love being a piece of it, you know?
It's amazing. And it is such a cool thing to be part of. And this is a fun year for you to do that. Cause as you note, they're going to the Hall of Fame. They just had the great documentary that came out, a month ago or a thousand years ago. I don't know. It's all a blur. And that is, you are an extension of that in so many ways. How much have you spent over the last two seasons of doing this, trying to balance the, we want to emulate the best of this, we are an extension of this, but we have to be our own thing. We've got our own crew. You know, you are not Ernie Johnson. Shaq is the one, you know, physical link, but you, obviously you want to do your own thing too. Is that a constant tension of trying to find the balance?
For me, it's always been, what are the core principles that we can take but allow our identities to shine? And the core principles that we thought were important were, I'm the only one that goes to the meetings, just like Ernie's the only one that goes to the meetings. In the beginning, Candace and Wade would show up all the time because they're really good teammates. And then what would happen is we'd get out there and they would be a little bit too rehearsed. And now everyone's kind of letting it fly. Another principle, I looked at the way that Ernie prepared, and I decided that if I don't have that level of information and preparation, then I'm not doing it right. I'm going to be me, and I'm going to talk the way I talk and react the way I react. But if I'm not going in there making these sheets for every show, just in case somebody says something and I need to have it. Or like for me, because Ernie's preparation's incredible. When I hear him say what somebody's record is with a halftime deficit, I go, see, that's good information. And so, and then the other thing was, really learning what are Candace's strengths, what are Wade's strengths, and not forcing an argument just because, you know, the Thursday show, those guys can go at each other. But like Wade he knows these guys, like they look up to him. And so he defended Steph. Like that's our unique value prop. And so to get the best out of them, but I really don't even think that we watch the Thursday show because we're basketball fans and it's Inside the NBA, but we look at it and go, how do we get the highlights? How do we get the information? And then what is our unique conversation? We're not really thinking about anything else, but the nice thing too, you know, like The NBA on TNT, it is a picnic back there. It is an energy. It, you know, the makeup room and the people hanging out. It's a vibe. And as me and Wade say, the show is in the back. And so if we're in the back laughing and cutting up, that's what it's going to be like out there. So we just want the energy to always be fun.
Yeah. You mentioned like that back of house or just that whole vibe of Studio J and that the whole complex. And I've had the opportunity to be there a few times. And what people don't probably appreciate is the fact that NBA TV and inside the NBA, it's all, of course, the same studio area. They're different studios, but within the same office, whatever park, it's all connected, and all the green rooms are all connected, the makeup area, whatever. So at any given time, if you're just hanging out, as I have a few times, Isaiah Thomas is there and Grant Hill is there and you know, Dennis Scott and Steve Smith and Sam Mitchell
walks in a tank top and you're like, okay. Yeah.
it's wild. Like it is the greatest thing. Like, I just love, I've been down there for work purposes in the past, but I find that it's just great just to hang out for 5 hours because it's not that you never know who's walking through. Anybody who walks through is somebody you are going to want to talk to and have a great conversation with. And there's so many amazing conversations that just happen in that green room area.
But some of which I'm sure we haven't had that all season. And that I think was also a defining thing is it is really just us four and like two other people. And I think that allowed us to really become like, we've really become really good friends, all four of us. And it's a healthy respect too. But I think a big thing is, you know, people aren't wandering off into all these conversations. We're just hanging out and watching the games. And I really think it gave us a chance, a more concentrated amount of time to be with each other. And now next year, we can't wait for this to open up. But when the back turns into the back again, and now we're really sure of ourselves, it's sort of like we got our little year to kind of congeal. And now we're ready for the party again, which is cool.
The pandemic actually kind of worked in your favor in some weird way.
I kind of think so. Like everybody just started focusing on their stuff. And I think it made us really tight, which is cool.
Shaq versus Candace has been a lot of fun. And I'm sure of this, that, you know, these things happen organically. And if you know anything about Shaq, and I don't know Candace that well, but you can see that like that is just evolved on its own. It's not like somebody's going to plan out, The key to this group is going to be, we're going to have this weird tension between these two going old school versus young school and technical versus whatever. It just sort of happened, but then it has repeated. So from your perspective, literally between them, how have those moments been for you? What does it feel like? Are you just sitting back and letting it go? When do you decide to try to steer or bring it back? Like, give me your bird's eye view there.
So the first moment that it was talking about a pick and roll, because Shaq is annoyed that pick and roll is like the only play that NBA teams run anymore. And so of course he starts going, well,
he's not the only one, by the way.
Yeah. And he would talk about, we would hedge. Why don't they hedge? And Candace went into like basketball, like 534 in like your senior year thesis, and started talking about, well, passing away. And at that point, I sat back and I realized this is a level of basketball conversation that I don't even know what they're talking about right now. So I'm in learn mode, and they start going, and Shaq start, and she's like, you don't even understand. And that's when it blew up. And that next week, Wade invited me over, and we're having dinner, and I go, that was a huge moment in our show. He goes, what do you mean? I go, because Candace has the most memeable face ever, and her reactions to Shaq said a million words. But then the way she broke Shaq down and the way that like Twitter and social media took it, it was really the first time where people weren't going, because it was a lot of these comments, because this is what dumb people write. Why is she on there? She never play in the NBA. But then it turned into Candace just schooled Shaq, and it flipped it. It went from why is she there to we need her to set him straight. It flipped in a night. And Wade goes, by the way, I rewatched the clip and I noticed something about you. And I said, what? He goes, you didn't talk for 8 minutes and 30 seconds and you looked really happy. And I went, yeah. because nobody's tuning in for me, Wade. Like my mom is, and like my friends are. But if you guys get into an 8-minute conversation about handoffs and screens and pick plays and weak side help, that's the show. And he was like, yeah, I could see it on your face. My dream is to start and then they take it and I don't have to talk again, because that's the key. But where it went from there, when she hit him with the take the surprise out your voice, when I said that she won Defensive Player of the Year and he didn't know, the first few times he was literally caught off guard and it was great. And then he began to realize people are enjoying this. And so that's why he calls her like the beautiful bully now. But because, you know, Shaq is once he sees that something's working, he's going to embrace it. But it is a big brother, little sister type of relationship. Shaq's relationship with her daughter is special. He's Uncle Shaqy for sure. And the thing is Shaq is all of our protectors. He would knock you out for Wade. And he has given me pep talks. He saw one time where Wade made fun of me for misidentifying a Dallas Mavericks and saying, Adam, we don't all look alike. And I went on Twitter and I went, oh, great, Wade, they're saying this. And Shaq got angry at me. And he was like, never look at that. Never look at social media. And he turned into like my dad for like the rest of the night. Anytime I picked up my phone, he was like, you don't look at those. He goes, they cannot impact you. You are better than them. And like, he was like building me up and he started calling people earthlings. And he was like, you're great. And he had never talked to me like that. And then the next day he texted me and he was like, I love you. And I was like, wow, you know? And so, you know who he is. Everyone thinks that he's a hater and everyone thinks that he's a showman. The true thing is like, he's the most lovable grown-up 8-year-old you'll ever meet in your entire life. But if he loves you, he will fight for you. And so that's the love that he has for Candace. But I think he loves her so much that he wants her to come at him, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's great because you just gave the full gamut, the full spectrum of Shaq. He is everything you see on TV. He is a showman. He does know how to push buttons. He does like to play into it. He does, I think, sometimes make himself a caricature of himself intentionally and doesn't mind it. And again, the Ringer story from John Gonzalez pointed it out. Shaq does not mind people making fun of him.
No.
Whether he intended to say something a certain way or whether it was accidental, he's cool with it all. But that other part of it, he is very tender. He is a big teddy bear. He does love people and protect them with a passion where if you're part of that, the fact that he would immediately flip that on you and go fatherly pep talk or admonishing you about Twitter trolls is very much him.
Yeah.
And like that is the full picture. And I think it's interesting, Adam, because I think like, so Candace is still new at this. She's still kind of growing into the role. Dwayne's still new at this. Shaq's been doing it a while. I will never forget that early on in my career covering him, Shaq would say, NBA stands for nothing but actors. And he would make what was then WWF references before it was WWE. He was into all that stuff. He liked talking shit. He liked like poking Mark Cuban, and then Mark Cuban would snap back and we'd go back to Shaq like, oh my God, can you believe what Cuban said? And this is early in Cuban's time. So we're just getting used to like the fact that Cuban is this way and is very much a pro wrestling kind of personality. And Shaq's like, it's just marketing, man. Just marketing. And he would tell us that. And I never knew what to think of it. And it took a while for me to realize that, oh, yeah, like some of this is genuine. Like Shaq could be genuinely pissed at me, at us, at whatever, the world, the league. But there were times he's playing it up. There are times he's playing it for ratings. He knows, he understands that this is entertainment.
It's part of the reason his connection with Wade is so strong, because he came to Miami and he told Wade, I'm going to make you a star. Just follow me. And Wade said, okay. And it was kind of what I think he always wanted to do with Kobe, but like they were both too young at the time and the personalities were too defined. But like, here's Dwayne Wade, where the stories that they always say is like, he was driving a Chrysler and living in a house that was like not that of an NBA star. And Shaq walked in and was like, you can't do this. Like, you are bigger than this. And he would come up to him and he'd whisper things into Wade's ear early on for like what to say. Be like, tell them we were shooting at 2 a.m. last night. And he'd be like, okay. And Wade would do it. But like, it was the duo, the Batman Robin that I think Shaq was always looking for. And for Wade, to Wade's credit, Wade would be willing to give Shaq credit for things that Shaq had nothing to do with. But it created this South Beach storyline that, one, they delivered. They got a title, but also like, we love that in the media. Like, it adds color. It's not just the, well, that was yesterday. We're going to focus on today. We're going to give 100%. We're going to execute. Like, that gets boring. Shaq adds story. Shaq adds color. And Wade was down, and it's, Shaq is brilliant, and people want to act like he's the big doofus. And it's like, no, he was a military background. He's super disciplined, but he can read a room. People don't realize this too. When those highlights come up on TV, he's freestyling the entire time. His brain is functioning so quickly. And I think we're so easy to say, oh, he's just a big dude. He is a multimillionaire business owner that can read you, see your energy, and freestyle. Like, he doesn't get enough credit for how smart he is. And so yeah. I would be crazy not to play off of it. Let him have, he's Shaquille O'Neal. Like, I always say, like, if Shaq was in a room and The Rock walked in, The Rock might be more excited to see Shaq than vice versa. That's how big that dude is. He's top 5 star in the world.
No question. And is in, I think, literally 90% of commercials between games. So there's a magnetism to him, and it's contagious. There's no question. Your best, like, actually, let me put it a different way. You have these moments on camera, and then it cuts, it goes to commercial, whatever, whether it's one of the tense ones, when it's one of those debate moments that people have, you know, really, got buzzing about this season. Do they continue off camera? Like, what's the best debate that didn't make it on camera?
Man, we've had some interesting conversations. Usually it's the stuff where they're talking negatively about a player. Cause I think one thing that, I have worked very hard with the producers is what I love about NBA social is it's inherently positive. We're championing a lot of the good stories of players. And so that's why we started Give Them Their Roses. That's why we do Flash It Forward, because I really wanted the Tuesday show to be very positive. And Wade and Candace, if a guy's not playing great, we'll be honest and they'll say we need more out of them. But if they're really doubting somebody, those are the conversations that are coming off behind the camera, because it's these guys know what they're going through and we don't need to be inherently negative. I think we've had a lot of interesting discussions behind the cameras about Luka and this discussion about potential, because Luka is somebody that is doing so much with seemingly a limited athletic profile. And the conversations that have really interested me, because I'm sitting here going, he's so young, and if he's already accomplished this, the ceiling seems endless. But the conversation that they were having is, what else is he going to be able to do? You know, like, if the athleticism isn't there, like, there's going to be a limit to some of this. And I had never thought of it like that. So that was a very interesting conversation. I think also Shaq gets angry if I overhype somebody too much, because as you know, with his G14 classification, he believes that we have had Hall of Fame discussions, and I am not going to mention certain players, where if I say somebody could get into the Hall of Fame or should get to the Hall of Fame, Shaq wants there to be two different Hall of Fames. I could tell he doesn't like the Hall of Fame right now. He thinks that too many people are getting in. He wants the Hall of really, really good. And in his, I don't know if I can curse, Hall of badass MFers. Yeah. And because he believes he's in that. Yes. And so that's when Shaq gets the most emotional, is when someone, they're like, oh, he's a Hall of Famer. And all he wants to do is just destroy this guy. But he knows I'm not going to do that on TV. That's very disrespectful. But at the same time, don't put me in the same conversation as that guy. And I get it. Cause like Shaq's a 101, you know?
Yeah, no question. I'm glad you brought up the term badass motherfucker, because you censored yourself. I did not, in front of the TNT cameras when they were doing the documentary. And I was shocked, delighted, and almost giggling on the couch. They kept in me saying, reflecting on Shaq back in the early part of his career, that he was the biggest, baddest motherfucker on the court.
Really,
and
was.
So there I was on national TV, but they did beat me. So, but yeah. Thank you, TNT, for keeping that. That was fun. And so you already did your Charles Barkley impression earlier. Do you have a Shaq impression? Because what I find is that the longer you're around Shaq, like on the beat, we all did Shaq. I'm not saying we were good at doing our Shaq impressions, but Shaq and Del Harris, those were like everybody on the beat did it, because you just couldn't help but do it. Do you have a Shaq impression yet?
Hey, Adam, when's your wedding?
And I'd be like, 28 days.
He'd be like, damn, that's crazy. You going to cry?
And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm going to cry. He goes, man, you soft. Yeah, it's just, it's like that low mumble. And then one thing that I love about Shaq is how delicately he pushes up his glasses, because he's got these huge hands, but it's always right like his second finger, and it's always like, but it's just this huge guy, and he goes, yeah, I love that guy. How's your Shaq impersonation?
You know, it varies. You know, it's always... my guys were looking for me, so I was just taking high percentage shots, and we got a formula this season. Damn, my stupid computer there. We got a formula this season.
Do you have a Del Harris impersonation? Because I don't even remember what Del Harris sounds like.
Well, you know, the old coach, no one really gave him credit. You know, when I took over the Lakers, Kobe was just 12 years old, and Shaq was in a full body cast. No one wants to give the old coach credit, you know. Dell was great. Dell, it's this Indiana drawl that I can't quite do right. I probably did it a lot better back then than now.
It was good.
I hope Del Harris never hears that. I loved that guy. He was a lot of fun to cover.
Shelby, clip that out.
By the way, John Gonzalez. John Gonzalez made a great point in his Ringer piece, which was that the NBA on TNT Tuesday is a very clunky and inelegant name. I suppose calling it Inside the NBA is like the Tuesday edition is not like, there's something that they just can't quite do there. Have you brainstormed this? Do you like you guys need a better name? Inside Tuesday or Inside Two Electric Boogaloo or something?
Well, the thing that I appreciate is that at first I was like, man, it's weird to put the day of the week like in the title, yeah. But at the same point, I love it, because I went back and I thought about it, and I was like, who is ever trying to claim Tuesdays? Like, I kind of look at it, and I'm like, was Tuesday this like forgotten day of the week where everyone's bemoaning Mondays, cheering for Fridays, thirsty Thursdays, we got wing Wednesdays. It was the only thing we were competing with was tacos. And so I look at Tuesdays and the fact that it was in the name, I appreciate. And the fact that I don't know what's official, but the fact that it wasn't seen as the undercard or the understudy that was like, no, you take that day and we'll take this day. I kind of like it. So yeah, maybe it's just TNT Tuesdays. But I, at this point, I like the name of Tuesdays in there. So I'm not sure.
You missed out. Missed two for Tuesdays, right? Like all the rock stations, pop stations, two for Tuesday. Here's two from Aerosmith. You know,
man, we were in the middle of planning like wedding songs, and like the quartet that we have, they knew a lot of Aerosmith, and I was like, who have you guys been performing for? Oh man, I can't hear that song without thinking of Armageddon. And so I was like, I'm not walking down the aisle to the Armageddon song.
Yeah. And that era of Aerosmith is one that I kind of like have shoved out of my brain, because it just like, I'm a little older, so I'm Walk This Way and
like
Sweet Emotion
is like, you know, that also.
Yeah. It's yeah. There's certain albums, certain eras where you're just kind of like, that's not my U2. That's not my Aerosmith.
You know? Yeah. So if you think of any good names for the show, we're all ears. We have time now.
Indeed. Best advice so far from Ernie Johnson. Great EJ.
I mean, there's always the classic, just be yourself. He gave me really good at, he's given me more life advice than work advice. Hmm. And to be honest, the best stuff that I've got from him is I got a day or two to just shadow him on a Thursday show. So it really wasn't work words as much as it was the process. So like Ernie on a Thursday is tucked away in his office watching two games, but it was more, the best advice he really gave me was, I don't think I have any with me, but he has color coded note cards. And the reason is you're at the studio. I get there at 2 because I heard that's when Ernie gets there. So I'm there from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. and everybody else is showing up at 6 or 6:30. So you're there for this whole time, but you have a 5-minute segment and then a 5-minute segment and then a first half and then a 5-minute. So you have these spurts. And so he kind of showed me the way of color coding highlighters and note cards so that if they go, hey, we're going to pre-tape the 40s, I have all my stuff right there. Because otherwise, all the papers look alike. So it was more of like this plan of attack. And then it was the fact that I was realizing he's not out there having a great time. And he's not out there laughing it up. And when you first start, you want to like, you know, I want to laugh it up with Shaq and I want to laugh it up with Wade. But I just, you know, these last few weeks, you begin to realize I'm going to sit on set and I'm going to sit with Underdog, who's like the great guy that comes up with stats and all these insights. And like, I'm going to iron this out by myself. And I'm not just going to try and be one of the guys. Like I have to. And so it was really watching Ernie more than anything, because in terms of advice, he's just going to look at me like he always has. And he's just like, what am I going to tell you? He's like, you got this, you know? And so I've always appreciated the fact that he hasn't preached to me, and that's been great. But life advice, like take it in moments, like those BlackBerry moments, as he always says, like cherishing and being in the present. Like Ernie is always in the present. And so that's just like life advice, to not forecast too much or dwell on the past. That's the life advice I cherish.
Very cool. You mentioned having like a dinner, or maybe there's been a couple of these with Dwayne, and watching the show on Thursdays and obviously watching the basketball too. What do you end up picking up? And also just even on set on Tuesdays, what do you end up picking up as, you know, you and I are casual fans. Like we cover the league. I've been writing about it a long time. I do not understand basketball at the level of a Dwayne Wade, obviously, or a Candace Parker. What are you getting in some of those moments? Is there anything memorable about like, oh, like I had no idea about that?
Yeah. Like I just love picking his brain. So like he told me a story of how he ended up getting traded to Chicago and like Leon Rose executing it. And like, he was like, you know, I kind of like Chicago. And then like an hour later, Leon Rose coming in and being like, it's done. And we being like, wait, what? And you're like, that's how the NBA works. You know, one time I asked him, I said, okay, so you're the Heat. It's crazy pandemonium. And you're taking on Harden, Russ, KD at that age. And I'm just asking him like, what could you see then? And I was like, and how'd you guys, I mean, it was a tough series, but it didn't go 7. And he's just explaining about how veterans play in the NBA and how young people play in the NBA and how you could be down 6 and a young team takes an early 3 early in the shot clock and long shots lead to long rebounds. And suddenly instead of 6, now you're down 3 and you have all the momentum. And just talking about how a Chris Paul-led team would never shoot it early in the shot clock because he's managing every single possession. And he's getting into the mind of veterans in the playoffs and why young teams, you know, they can win the first game, but you lose later on. And or how, oh, you know what? When I would play Kobe would always let me go by him because he's trying to come up behind you. And so when I played Kobe, I have to push the ball out more. I love to hear about relationships. So about how him and Kobe would battle, but the Olympics, the first time that Kobe ever really said anything to him was about a month or two beforehand. And they're at like the free throw line. He looks at him and he goes, I can't wait for the Olympics. And that's all he said. Little did he realize that like, that was the defining moment for that up and coming generation where LeBron and Bosh and Wade got to see his work ethic and actually got to be a teammate with him. And so it's the relationships that are special. It's Spoelstra wasn't necessarily the guy early on. But what he blossomed into, to watch the evolution of him, you know, it's because Wade is such an emotionally intelligent human where he understands what his teammates need and he's very thoughtful. And so, you know, it's not just about motivation and trying to intimidate. It's the people. And so I just love his stories, man. But I learned this from working with Chris Sims in football. It's better to shut your mouth and listen than to work your takes out on them and try to impress them. And I think Wade has said this to me a lot. He goes, I appreciate your curiosity because I'm one of those guys that will go to his house and I'm not going to give him my takes. I want to just take from him. And so he's willing to give, which has been great.
It brings up one of the themes that has been going on for the last several years. And again, was referenced in the Ringer story, but just that the Thursday night show, people are starting to get a little cranky about the idea that, well, they're not talking about basketball. They're not getting into the technical part of it. Or they're just goofing too much, or they seem out of touch and all these critiques. And I get it, but I think there's a split in the audience on this, right? The reason that inside the NBA, and as you said, it's on your Mount Rushmore, even though you couldn't name a fourth thing to put on the Mount Rushmore. Just
pardon the interruption is probably what I would put up
there. Ah, there we go. So your others, as you mentioned, were ESPN's College Game Day and Sports Center. And so then inside.
Yeah, actually, let me take pardon the interruption off, and I'll put up CBS Fox NFL or CBS Sunday Football, whatever that show is.
Cool. But the reason inside the NBA is there on that Mount Rushmore and that it's been such this longstanding success and is going into the Hall of Fame is because it balances all these things so well. And it is entertainment and it is entertaining. And we watch sports. I think there's a divide. I shouldn't say divide. It's not binary. There's a spectrum among sports fans. There are those who absolutely love the grittiest, nittiest technical stuff in the X's and O's, and they want to hear every last stat and every film breakdown and all that. I think the majority of sports fans love sports for the drama and the personalities and yeah, the petty grudges and the dynamics of interpersonal skills of this player and that player's partnership or this player and that coach and how they came together and how they worked it out. And it's a human experience and we love the athletic prowess. We love all this other stuff, but it is the spectacle of it on various levels as an athletic endeavor, as a personal journey. It's all of these other things. And of course, I'm saying this because I'm a freaking writer and those are the things that are most interesting to me to write about. It doesn't mean that the technical aspects of the game aren't important, but I think that that's the tension. And I think that because social media exists now, the voices that are more of the purists who are like, no, just break down the game. I want to know how they guarded that pick and roll or why that out of timeout play worked. You guys are not going to do that on Tuesday. They're not going to do that on Thursday. And so, but it does seem that on the Tuesday show, there is a little bit more effort to try to respond to that crowd, not to the criticism, but to give, and maybe that's just because Candace can't help herself or Dwayne can't help himself. And they're just going to go and jump in and do that. But right. I was just curious how you see that ongoing kind of.
Well,
debate.
I'll say this, cause I see the transition every year when the playoffs start that Thursday show inside the NBA, they get granular because suddenly the games really do mean something. And I think it's really tough for people to realize when it's game 35 and a team loses and everybody wants to be like, oh, do you think they can make a championship now? It's a ridiculous conversation to have. And like, yeah, you can tailor the conversations and make it super granular. But like a lot of these, if I'm reading an Athletic article or a Ringer article and I'm trying to get like deep stats, like I'll come in there And I'm prepared to talk about the fact that Miami is 26th in offensive rebounds if there's a stat that's skewed. But like, that's not good television, Howard. Like people want to talk about like, oh, why aren't you talking about the fact that like Christian Wood is doing this and doing all that. And it's like, okay, you just did, but there's really no other way to take that. What are you going to do? Well, how does Christian Wood compare to other power forward center combos? What does this mean for the future of the Houston Rockets? These necessarily aren't the most engaging conversations, especially when you are in the middle of a season where there's more games being played for weeks, like per week. There are so many teams being sit out. We have never had this amount of blowouts per game. Like we're sitting guys on the second half of back-to-backs, and there are two audiences. Like, look, when they post clips of the Tuesday show, I know Shaq will hate that I say this, but I check the comments and they're like, just give us Chuck. Like they just want to laugh. And to be honest, like I'm kind of one of those guys too. Like when it's the Thursday show and I know that Ernie has been getting ready to talk about Blazers Heat all week, and Chuck comes on and goes, man, did you see Bill and Melinda split up? And that's now the whole pregame show. Like, I'm dying because that's so funny. But when the playoff starts, Chuck is one of those guys. He watches games every night, every night. And so as soon as he pays attention to the game, he can break it down better than anybody. And so when the playoffs start, that whole Thursdays are casual, it goes away. Those guys get deep into it. And I just think that a lot of NBA fans don't want to admit that a 72-game season or an 82-game season is a really long road. And if you're not having fun during it, then, like, I don't know. Like, what do you want it to be? Basketball Reference for 4 hours and we're just sitting there comparing stats? Like, there needs to be a happy medium. And I don't think they go too far one direction. I really don't.
Yeah. The Ringer story, the last time I'll mention this, there's kind of the subtext that it hints at and touches on, but doesn't ever actually go too hard at, which is the idea that maybe you guys are the future inside the NBA, right? There's this kind of parallel sitting there, and you can watch that documentary that they just did on Inside the NBA and see how amazing this run has been and continues to be and will be for the foreseeable future. But do you sit there and look at them? They're having that breakfast at various cut-ins, you know, in the documentary. Are you looking there saying like 30 years from now, that's me and Candace and Shaq and Wade, or are you cannot let your mind wander that far?
It would be the biggest blessing that I think could ever happen. The fact that those guys are my teammates, the fact that Charles knows my fiance, and if I see Kenny out, he dabs me up and he asks if I'm good, or, you know, Ernie, just randomly texts me things like, great job, kid. Like, geez, like I told Chuck, I was like, this is what it must have been like for you to get drafted to the Sixers and like Dr. J is on your team. You know, like I look at Luka and that year he had with Dirk, and I'm like, I feel like that. Like, I'm not comparing myself to Chuck and Luka, but what I'm saying is just like there's this moment where everyone wants to talk to you about the future. As someone that does a lot of NFL stuff, it's been funny to Tom Brady every year. Is this your last year? Is this your last year? And he's just enjoying it. So for me, I'm so much more caught up in, let me do right by the position. You know, as someone that has worked the LA Daily News, the New York Times and Bleacher Report, that there have been a lot of guys over the years and women who you talk to now and they're not doing it anymore. And for me, like being in Nebraska and being in Louisville, Kentucky, and then going digital, like the fact that I'm still able to do this, even though I'm young and I know so many people that life took over or they got a different job. And the fact that like one of my really good friends, Salehi, sent me like a video today where he goes, it's still crazy that the show that I grew up on, that one of my best friends is hosting it. It is not lost on me. And so for me, having covered sports and knowing that the athletes that have longevity are the ones that don't think ahead. And they're the ones that, like, they spend the off season trying to get better. It would be a crime for me to think that far ahead. At the same point, if I told you that me and Wade weren't sitting there and watching it and looking at each other and just kind of smirking and being like, how dope would that be? Of course. But my main thing is, I know Kenny ain't done. I know Chuck is enjoying it. And I know Ernie, like, I would be upset if Ernie got taken away and they were like, and I'd be like, absolutely not. Like Ernie's not slowing down. Like, you guys are crazy. And so for me, it's like, just because we're there and we're young doesn't mean that we need to be replacing people. The way that I look at it is like, let's just make ourselves each other better. You know, like, let's see how long this can go. And then when you guys, like, it's their call. And I don't want that seat anytime soon.
Not to mention, you know, kudos to Turner for having gone this route. You now have two tentpole shows. Like, you don't, sounds one does dope. Not have to be the replacement at all, right? Like, yeah. You have now taken over another night and given everybody another different, but equally potent and entertaining version of this. Like, I didn't ever think in all the years of watching Inside that, oh, we need a second Inside, you know, but that's what they've accomplished.
I appreciate you saying that.
It's fantastic. Yeah. There should be no rush. Yeah. No, there should be no rush to be,
this is how flippant this stuff is, Howard. When I first started, people were like, how are you going to handle the pressure of Inside the NBA? Like, I would get that question all the time. And now people are like, you think you're going to replace them? I was like, a year ago, you were like, you can't even measure up. And so it's such nonsense. There's more than one night a week. So let's just do NBA television all the time.
There are still five more for you to take over, Lefko.
Yeah, let's do Wednesday.
What is Wednesday? Wednesday's hump day. There's no two for Wednesday. What does Wednesday have?
Wednesday, Wing Wednesday.
Wing, is that a thing?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a wings guy. Wings. So.
Well, if you think about, like, the NBA universe, so Wednesdays are like Stephen A. Smith, right? Fridays is like your NBA countdown. I feel like Saturdays is NBA TV. Sundays is ABC. And then Mondays is like, you know what I mean? And everybody has their own little time slot.
We were talking earlier for your pod and you were saying that, you know, one of the great things is that you can just ask the questions, let everybody else go. They're the ones with the takes. You do not have to get into the fray. So I'm going to make you get in the fray just for a few minutes here. Let's just start off as spicy as possible. Who's your MVP?
Jokic. Look, I tried as a Sixers fan. I was like arguing with myself, how can I argue for Embiid? And I realized that one of the big arguments for Embiid is without him, they're 9-11. And with him, they're like something like 31. Well, something incredible. And I was like, well, you know what the Nuggets record is without Jokic? It's 0-0. So, like, why is the one argument for Embiid something that Jokic doesn't even have to deal with? And I think in this season of the most games per week and the fact that, like, Michael Porter Jr. was out for seemingly a month with COVID-related issues, like, on his own team, and Jamal, like, this season has been defined by how many games has KD missed, how many games has LeBron missed, how many games has Embiid missed or Jimmy Butler, that Jokic has been there and he's been a top 10 performer in points, rebounds, assists. Every night, it's a different highlight. Last night, he goes 16 for 17 from the free throw line, career highs in both. Like, every night, it's special. And in the Western Conference, they're the 4 seed. And they're right there with the 3 seed. So Jokic is my guy. CP3 should be a top 5 vote getter. Steph Curry should be a top 5 vote getter. Embiid should be a top 5 vote getter. I don't know about the other one. I'm not sure. Like, those 4 I feel good about.
Yeah.
But it's Jokic for me.
Yeah. I think it's those 4 and Giannis for me. The ballots due Monday night. Yeah, I think that's it. And I agree. I think it's Jokic over Embiid, and the games played does matter, especially when
now,
it's
I
as
think
much
if Jokic
as
battled Embiid in a 7-game series, I think Embiid would be the better player.
Sure, but that's not what the award is not that. Yeah, no. Exactly. Coach of the Year. This is always like a 5-6-7 way race, but I feel like this year there's like a clear top 2 or 3 kind of.
Yeah. I look at the names and positions that really jumped out to me, Monty in Phoenix, I think has been great. Doc in Philly. I look at the Atlanta Hawks, and that's a really interesting one to see their transition. But I think that if I was, I would probably go Monty.
Yeah.
And Phoenix. Is that where you're going?
I'm at the moment. So earlier in the year, I thought it was going to be Quinn Snyder. Then it was Quinn and Monty. And then Tibbs, the more the Knicks kept going, it was like, well, Tibbs has to be in the discussion. Well, no, right. Tibbs has to be. No, he's definitely on the ballot. No. Maybe he's first. I don't like. So as we're coming down to the end here, like this is one of those years where I'm literally going to be looking at like the last minute of the last game, possibly. I think it's Monty over Tibbs by a hair, but you can't go wrong either one of those. And I think Quinn Snyder deserves a lot of credit. I know people think the Jazz didn't make as big of a leap, but there are tweaks that they made, and it's hard to go from good to great in this league.
I just want to give credit to Doc because. Like as a fan of this team for a number of years, Brett Brown was great out of the timeout, but the way in which they would play down to the level of competition for all of those years was extremely infuriating. And to not have Embiid for that time, to figure out Simmons and Embiid like each other now. Like that's coaching. Like he broke it down to a level. Tobias is having a career year. The jump that Tybal has made. The fact that right now they're the one seed, and we'll see if they lock it in. And they're I hope that he gets some recognition because what Doc did has been pretty impressive.
He should, and that's the thing. Like I think Monty and Tibbs are going to get most of the attention. Quinn quite a bit. Doc and Steve Nash both deserve at least some. Consideration. It's a 3-man ballot, so like it's hard. You can't try to give credit to everybody. But
the only guy
Mike
that's
Malone.
Played every game for the Nets has been Joe Harris. Like that's a pretty damn good coaching job. They played 7 games together. The big three.
You can't say, oh wow, well he has super team. It's easy. Like no. He never had the super team. He had them for like 168 minutes or whatever that stat
the
is.
The most consistent player might be Bruce Brown. You know what I mean? Like it's nuts.
It's quite possible. Play-in, pro or con?
Love it.
Me too.
I love it so much that I convinced Shaq last night. So we're in commercial break, and he goes,
Adam, can you explain to me this play-in? Because Chuck did this thing, and it doesn't make any sense, and I hate it.
And I said, okay, let's look at the West. And he goes, okay. I said, okay. So the Lakers are going to play the Warriors. Who do you think wins? He goes, Lakers. I go, okay. So the Lakers are your 7th seed. He goes, okay. And I go, Grizzlies play this. And I just broke it down like that. And he goes, oh, so the 7 and 8, it's like double elimination. I go, exactly. And he looked at me. He goes, this is going to be awesome. I go, yes. I said, the only people that shouldn't like this are the 7 and 8 seeds. And I get it. But we are getting meaningful basketball with 5 days left. And you know what conversation no one's having? Tanking. No one's talking about tanking, and that's usually what we talk about now. So for me, I think it will really hit everybody when the Lakers play the Warriors, let's say that happens, and or they see Russell Westbrook in a winner-go-home situation. Yeah. And I remember back when baseball did this, and people were like, oh, this is dumb. And then it was like this incredible game that came down to the 9th inning, and it's something that purists don't like. But when we're in it, man, it is going to be sweet. It is going to be fun.
It pays off twice. It pays off twice because we've had weeks of meaningful basketball when normally teams have pulled the plug and they are tanking. And yeah, okay, the Thunder are tanking. There are a couple other teams that have had to let go of the rope because they were definitely way out of it. But there were way more teams still competing than there ever were in the past at this time of year. And that can only be a good thing. And then the second win is, we're going to get these really exciting games next week where – it's win or go home, essentially, double elimination for the 7 and 8 and all that. But those games are going to have really high stakes and be really exciting. And you could say, oh, well, at the end of it, it's just to become the seventh and eighth seeds who are probably losing anyway. Sure. But the drama is self-contained. It's in the moment. And if we can rhapsodize about March Madness because of the single elimination nature of it and the drama that bakes into it, this is going to be like that on steroids.
And also, I would say it creates hype for the lower seeds that normally don't get any. Last year, Memphis had the edge over Portland. Portland wins those games. And what was everybody talking about? Oh, man, Portland could take this from the Lakers because, you know, they're playing and it's building it up. Like, if the Hornets knock off the Celtics and, like, LaMelo has, like, a huge game, that's going to create so much more excitement for a 2-7 matchup that people might, they would have just usually put the Nets over. It's going to create hype. If Steph goes for 50 in the play-in game and now they're playing the Suns, you know darn well that Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith would be like, oh, Steph is the hottest. Who knows what's going to happen? Like, it creates hype for the seeds that normally were already focusing on the second rounds.
Yeah. Whatever is lost or whatever is clouded by the idea that the seventh and eighth seeds don't have the security that they had in the past, or that maybe a 35-win team ends up in the eighth spot instead of a 42-win team, I don't care. I understand it's a long season and you've done all that to earn that spot, but you know what? The payoff with all of this is
are we far outweighs whatever the thing is. That really don't like this. Like, are there actually people out there that don't like the play-in other than LeBron and Mark Cuban?
And probably every team for the foreseeable future until we get used to this who are in that 6-7 range, 6-7-8 range, and they're trying to stay out of the 7. There will still be complaints, I think, Adam. Like, I think people will still, the purists and the people who think better. But people like the idea that you play 82 games, which is a lot of games in a normal year, to establish your standing. And if you get to the end and then a single loss or two losses can drop you out of the postseason, like, I get that. That's not a straw man. That's a legitimate argument.
Okay.
But it's not a legitimate enough argument.
The other thing that I like, too, is, like, you know, there are some teams that started off hot and then they get an injury or they're not playing great, but their early lead locked them into that 7 or 8. Yeah. And you would think theoretically this gets the teams that are playing the best right now in, which is what we want.
Yes. Yes. So the case in point, of course, is the Wizards, because they got wiped out by COVID and it took all year to kind of climb out of the hole. And if you're the team, if they go from wherever they're going to finish, 10th or 9th, to making the playoffs because they were peaking at the right time, and a team that had cruised and kind of slipped down to 7th or 8th, I want the hot team in the playoffs, not the team that kind of stumbled to the finish.
Well, how about this? The Celtics right now. I mean, this team is playing awful. They don't start well. They don't finish well. Jaylen Brown is out. Evan Fournier drops 17 in the first half. You're like, great. Drops 3 in the second half. They are not a team that scares anybody. And if they have to play Washington and Washington gets in, it's a better playoffs.
Yes.
It just is.
Yes. Yes. Sorry, Celtics.
I'm done with Boston. Yeah. And I apologize, wow, Boston fans. But out of every team on Tuesday nights, I felt like 80% of the Tuesday nights we had Boston. And they were just so inconsistent. I just can't watch them anymore. And it's not anti-Boston. It's just this. It's the worst defensive team that Brad Stevens has ever had. And it is obvious. And I don't enjoy watching them play.
Yeah, there's just something amiss there. Chemistry is off, whatever. They can't blame Kyrie anymore. He's been gone for 2 years. It's just something's out of whack there. All right, last one. You do not have to pander to the host on this. Pro or con, bigger MVP ballot. I have proposed that we go 7, 8, something. We have a really complex, interesting field this year. And you and I discussed like 5 of the candidates. We didn't even talk about Lillard or Doncic or Kawhi Leonard.
Hold on. I haven't understood this. In my mind,
yes,
there was like 2 days this season where Lillard was an MVP.
Like, 2 days?
The fact that he is thrown in, it doesn't make sense to me.
I mean, his stats are spectacular, but also it's a lot of, if you go and look up,
had like a few weeks where he was averaging like 16 points. Like, he also had like some really bad weeks too.
The number of games he single-handedly won for them that enabled them to still be in contention for a top 6 and not the play-in is astounding. And they were without Zach Collins, obviously, all season, without Nurkic for most of the season, without CJ McCollum for half the season. he single-handedly kept them not just in it marginally, but substantially. And so he has a case. It's not as strong as maybe Curry's, but we have, you know,
I was a big proponent of James Harden for like 80% of the season too.
Yeah. And then he went down. So it's so just, you know,
I think I agree with you. I think it needs to be longer. I said on my podcast with you that why isn't it just an infinite amount of spaces and whoever gets a vote, like you could say Julius Randle, like could be MVP. I think it should be longer for the main reason is we don't know what the award is supposed to honor. Every podcast I listen to, every show I watch, somebody else has a different criteria. Oh, yeah. But the leadership. Oh, if you took him away. Oh, statistics value above replacement. There are so many different criteria that to limit it to five, I feel like there's more criteria than five that people are using. Like there are five different MVP awards that different members of the media give out. And so I don't think it impacts contracts like the all NBA teams do. But I think as I look back at the story of the NBA, I think it's more fun to look back and see, oh, here's who the top 10 were, because after five, those stories get lost. And I just want the stories to be remembered.
And that's the thing. So all NBA people sometimes say, well, that's how you know who the best players of that season were, because it's the top 15 players. And no, it's not the top 15 players, because it is actually by position. And so there are years we have to shoehorn in a center who was only okay because you needed to have that. We can have the positional argument some other time. But if MVP has a longer ballot, then there's more names that as you went down the list, you say, okay, this guy was the MVP. And then you could see it gradually declining. And 10 years, 20 years later, you could say, those guys all got mentioned for a reason. And it gives you some sense historically about who mattered and over the 100% course of an era. And MVP points matter. You know, you could see how many Carmelo got over the course of his career, Chris Paul got over the course of his career. And even if you didn't win the award, you could see that this guy mattered at the top of the league in the upper echelon for a 5-year, 10-year, 15-year run. I don't know.
Who's your fifth MVP guy, by the way?
At the moment, I think I'm going Jokic, Embiid, Giannis in that order for the top three. And then I think it goes Curry, Chris Paul. I could go Chris Paul, Curry. I think it's down to those two. If you had asked me, so at various times in the last couple months, I've been jotting it down in a Word document. Just, this is my snapshot. And like Tim Bontemps comes with his poll for ESPN.com and I've got to have it. So I'll stick it on this Word doc. So I've got a running progression of what my thought process has been. At times I've had Kawhi in there. I've had Lillard in there. But that's where it is right now, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting to me too. If the Bucks sit in this three and somehow the Heat are there at six, and the Bucks playoff road is supposed to be Heat, Nets, Sixers, like here we go again. You know, it's gonna be tough.
Jimmy Butler, Jimmy Butler's another guy. If I had a longer MVP ballot, would possibly 100%. Be on there.
I mean, I the fact that he's leading the NBA in steals, everything is up for him. You know, it's what a year. And then you look at with and without him, it's so drastically different.
Dramatically. Yeah. Well, this has been a blast, my friend. Thank you so much for spending the time. Really appreciate it. Congrats in advance on your wedding 2 Saturdays from now, I believe. Enjoy your honeymoon. Enjoy the downtime. Folks, listen to him on the Left Go Pod, catch all his stuff on Bleacher Report, and eventually back on Taco Tuesday nights on TNT.